You are listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HRV and living a healthy life. It's the HRV Hour. You can contact us at hrv@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Instagram, HRV_hour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on a Monday and Tuesday at noon, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Hi everybody this week. How are we all?
Yeah, we're good.
All right, I'm good. Sue. How are you and Stuart?
Well,
we're good.
Yeah. It's getting colder, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I've had to put the heating on.
I've got mine on.
Yeah, I've had to put it on. Damn.
Oh, bless you.
Oh, gosh. So how you been doing, Stuart?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. Well, I've just been doing a little bit of research into sort of like drug and alcohol services in Brighton, actually. Mm-hmm. And I've got some information here. Do you want me to give you that?
Yeah, we can do that. We can talk about that because I know we've got some interviews we'll talk about as well. So you go ahead with that then.
I was just looking into some of these sort of like services available in Brighton, and I came across this thing that funding to help recovering drug addicts and drinkers was cut by hundreds of thousands of pounds. Last year, the cut of £340,000 was actually made by Brighton City Council, despite a report by the Health and Wellbeing Board last year estimating that substance misuse was costing the city around £107 million a year. And Brighton and Hove still remains the southeast capital for drug and alcohol deaths, with 24 people just last year dying alone in the city. Wow. So it seems pretty idiotic to me that they've cut funding for this, which actually leads me to the Brighton Hove Recovery Service, which is formerly known as Pavilions. They have a wide range of support programs for suffering addicts and drinkers there. And it's also where I met Gary Smith, LGBTQ worker for that service. And he agreed to give me an interview last week. And
we're going to be playing that. It'd be great.
Yeah, more information in that interview for people if they want to access services.
Great. We look forward to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be a good piece.
So, Tony, Tony, what you been up to stuff? What you been up to the last week?
Yeah, just kind of organising people at the Hub, really. Like this, obviously, really... what is it? Not very clear news about tiers and stuff. I've been trying to explain what people can do, what they can't do, what the deals are if you go outside or if you meet inside and whatever. Cafes reopening and stuff. And quite a few of them are really unsure about how they stand with regards to where they can go, what they can do. So she's been doing that, really. And obviously, you know, dead excited because Gary from Lunch Positive is reopening as of Friday from 12 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And lunch has been served from 1. But obviously, if people want to get grocery and chilled meals to just put in the microwave, just contact Gary at Lunch Positive and you can organise that and go and pick it up. So people can have a look on lunchpositive.org and contact Gary through that. If they want to get hold of us, go on the hrvhour@gmail.com and we'll forward anything on to Gary.
Okay, cool.
Right.
Yeah, no, so it's just a busy week, but it's, you know, as usual. So, and what about yourself? What have you been up to?
Yeah, well, you know, as World AIDS Day has just passed, we're still very busy delivering our sessions, our talks, our HIV awareness talks throughout the city, so that's still going on for the rest of this week, so pretty sort of busy with all of that. So it'll be nice when that's all over in the nicest possible way. I mean, it's a great busy time for us, but it can be quite exhausting. But you know, we're still here, we're still putting on a show for our listeners, which is, you know, still crucial, I believe, so for our listeners. So but hey guys, we've got we say this every week and I'm going to say it again, we've got another great show.
Good show.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're starting off with the first interview we're going to be doing is with Gary. Is it Gary Smith, Stuart?
Gary Smith.
From Pavilions.
Well, used to be Pavilions. It's now the Brighton and Hove Recovery Services.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we've got an amazing interview with Dale. So he's going to be talking, and it's a really great connection. He's going to be talking about his personal story, and that really fits in with the interview that you've done with Gary. And I'm not going to say any more because I'm going to leave awesome. The listeners hanging on to the edge of their seat. So, Josh has done a really powerful interview with Dale, so that'd be great. And our listeners probably remembered last week we done the first part of Jonathan Blake's story, diagnosed with HIV for nearly 38 years. Right. We're actually going to be, we're not going to be able to put it on this week's show because we've got those two fantastic interviews already booked in. But we're going to be showing Aaron Jonathan's part two story on the 17th of December. So that will be the week after next.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Hello listeners, this is Stuart here from Radio Reverb and I'm doing an interview with Gary Smith for the HIV Hour. I've come along to Richmond House to meet Gary, a support worker at the Brighton and Hove Recovery Services. Gary mainly focuses his efforts within the LGBT community. Hi Gary and welcome to the HIV Hour. And can I start by asking you, how have you been during this awful year?
Well, it's been a challenging year because in April we transferred from Pavilions, which was a previous drug service in Brighton, and we transferred over to Change Growth Live, the CGL service, which we're now part of. And then, of course, you know, we had the situation with COVID and lockdown and people being isolated, and us as a small being split into small teams.
Right.
But we're coming out the other side of it, and we've continued to provide a service for people, which I think is the most important.
That is important. Yeah. Wow. That's quite an achievement considering what's going on at the moment. Can I ask you, what made you decide that helping people with drug and alcohol problems is something that you wanted to do? Is that something you've always felt, or is that because I know that you've been doing this for something like 10 years or more here in Brighton.
Yeah, so, I mean, initially I came into this role, I was working for CRI, and the role had it was funded for 6 months.
Right.
And we established from very early on that there was a real need for this service, particularly with the community within Brighton,
sure.
Which is a high proportion of LGBT.
Yeah.
But before that role, I worked for a youth homeless project in Eastbourne.
All right.
And I've worked in housing, and I worked in mental health.
Wow.
And I qualified as a therapist. So I guess I've got a lot of skills that I've brought to the table, and also I identify as a gay man myself. So I can empathise with some of the situations in which people find themselves.
And all of those things, the housing and stuff, that's all linked anyway to kind of drugs and stuff. So that's right. I mean, how concerned are you about the high levels of drugs being taken by members of the Brighton Hove gay community? Are you very concerned, or?
I think over the lockdown period, we've been incredibly busy, and because of the situation which people have found themselves, I mean, particularly existing drug users, particularly around the chemsex and stuff like that, has definitely continued.
It's exploded, hasn't it?
Through the lockdown and obviously with COVID, but also what we find is the numbers, not just in the LGBTQ community, but generally across the drug service, massive increase in alcohol use.
Oh, really?
In problematic use.
Really? Is that something with drugs and alcohol together, or is that people swapping drugs, say, to becoming more of a drinker?
I think it's it's an issue about if you imagine that, you know, within the accommodation within Brighton, you've got people that are living in, you know, high proportion of studio flats, or people living in isolation, can't access the support, or their families or other agencies that they're probably engaged with on a regular basis, that people are, you know, like ourselves, the support that we're offering to people and that people are engaging with very successfully is online mutual aid support.
Okay.
So I think it's just that the situation of the isolation, the fact that we're living with COVID, we've never faced a situation
I've never known anything like it either. It's terrifying.
It's been a very, very odd time for us all.
Hugely challenging, I should imagine, for yourself and people here. Do you think people with HIV are at more risk of becoming addicts due to the impact of getting a result would push them more into addiction, or was that...
I think over the 10 years that, you know, I've worked very, you know, very closely with, you know, with Terence Higgins Trust, which are based at Ship Street, absolutely excellent service
they are,
in Brighton, that support provides support for people living with HIV, and of course the sexual health and HIV services like the Beacon, and I think over the 10 years, the majority of young men that I've worked with are living with HIV, and sometimes, you know, over a long period of time, which I've worked with people, you know, there are a number of issues or complexity of issues. And you know, I think what you're touching on there, sometimes if people didn't get support at the point of their diagnosis that they're living with HIV, that can have a massive impact. And it isn't until they address that and do some therapeutic work that they realise that was a trigger point for their...
Wow. Problems. Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it, actually? Yeah, I mean, it does make sense. And in terms of like extra support for people with her HIV, what would you do? What would you do here? For,
well, at the moment, it's really interesting because I think you know, when I first started in this role, that Gary, who's the manager at Lunch Positive, so that's a social space for people living with HIV that takes place at Dorset Gardens Methodist Church. Every Friday over the years, and that's a very, you know, is attended very regularly.
Yeah.
You know, it's run by volunteers. They provide 3-course meals.
It's a fantastic thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it really is.
Absolutely
amazing.
And it's really important that even in the situation that we're in now, that between 1 and 2 o'clock every Friday at Dorset Gardens Methodist Church, that they're providing a small team that can provide...
They are,
takeaway food,
they're doing
groceries.
Huge amounts of deliveries to people, aren't they?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. So I think it's really important that you get it out there, that if somebody's, you know, living with HIV and they're struggling at the moment, they can go there between 1 and 2 and access
some
groceries and food.
Yeah, that's a good thing, actually, and I just want to ask you, I mean... How difficult is it to seriously and finally overcome a drug addiction? Is there such a thing, or are people always never fully out of the picture? Because it'd be nice to sort of believe that you could walk away from addiction at some point in your life and rebuild what was probably your broken life.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking on a personal level, I've suffered with addiction a lot myself, and I've often relapsed and things in the past. And but now I'm finding a healthier lifestyle for myself, and I'm just wondering whether that's something that I can believe in and give hope to people that it's worth carrying on.
I think most certainly, Stuart, and I think thanks for being honest and sharing that with myself and the listeners. But I mean, I think, you know, anybody that comes into the service, their use or their relationship with the substance they use is unique to them.
Right.
And so even though, you know, they all might be using the same substance, as, you know, as I said, we've had people using crystal meth or DBL or, you know, a number of other substances. But to address those issues, everybody's needs are unique. But one of the things that is, you know, very common is for people to embrace and engage with mutual aid. Other okay. people that have been on the same pathway as themselves.
Right.
I mean, within the service that with CGL, we've got the ACT group, which is acceptance and commitment therapy, uh-huh. which is very CBT and okay. mindfulness based. So that is therefore enabling people, giving them to the tools to make those changes right. in regard to their behavior
okay.
and to educate them about the triggers that may trigger them to use.
Sure.
But I think to answer your question, yeah. I think with all of the people, I've worked with people from, you know, people in their early 20s to people yeah. in their 60s that have all been using wow. the same drug, but their experience, their relationship is with that drug is unique to
right.
them.
Okay.
And also with some people that can come in, engage with the mutual aid, engage with myself
yeah.
and the other groups and the other fantastic agencies within Brighton.
That's
we're very blessed here. With
we are, we're really good. We are really
particularly
spoiled.
With the LGBT
yeah,
community.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
we've got, as I said, Lunch Positive, we've got Terence Higgins yeah, Trust that provide fantastic service. And also Mind Out, the LGBTQ service, which is
sure.
based in Brighton.
Okay.
And I mean, quite often, you know, it isn't uncommon for people that I've worked with that, you know, that quite often, you know, the drug use has been masking issues around their
yeah.
sexuality,
yeah, yeah.
about that they've been self-medicating their depression or their low mood. The issue is that everybody's journey is unique to
sure,
them.
Sure.
And the triggers to use or, you know, are going to be unique to them. And so it's about us as a service and the other agencies in the city being inventive in the way that we provide support and engage with the person where they are at that point
okay.
in their recovery.
Right.
Giving them the tools to enable them to make the changes that they want to make and then build a network of support, whether that's through mutual aid,
uh-huh.
other agencies, to ensure that people maintain
right.
their recovery.
Okay.
And also not to be afraid to ask for additional
sure.
support if it's needed. That's why we're here. That's why we've got developed a number of groups that we've got at the moment. We've got within the service at the moment, we've got the ACT group, which is acceptance and commitment therapy, which is based around CBT and mindfulness. So it's in a mutual aid setting, getting people to look at what are the triggers, you know,
uh-huh.
to build a network of tools to enable them to maintain their recovery.
Right.
And also I think it's really important to remember that the common factor with most people that come into the service, whether it's historic drug use or a lapse or, you know, the fact is that the life that they had before this point
mm-hmm.
is it's spiraling out of control,
yeah.
particularly with the men that I've worked with within the LGBTQ
right.
community.
Okay.
The fact that, you know, their jobs have probably been at risk or, you know, their home's at risk or their relationships have broke down or they're in chaotic lifestyle, which is having an impact on every area of their life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it comes down to the point that they're there and their relationship is with the substance rather than the outside world and engaging with. And it's about rebuilding that life to put in positive aspects
sure.
and to set goals, realistic goals, and the fact that, you know, to enable people to move forward and maintain that recovery.
Right. Yeah, not to give up, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, that's really encouraging. That's good. During these difficult times that we're all faced with at the moment, how easy is it for people to access your services here?
Well, it's very easy. I mean, so CGL is a Brighton and recovery service. It's very straightforward. If just people go onto the website and then
uh-huh.
if they click on referrals, they can self-refer.
Okay.
Or another agency can refer. And
right.
it just asks three simple questions.
Right.
So name,
okay.
address, the reason that you contacted.
Uh-huh.
And then what will happen? The team here will make contact via phone,
right.
and at the moment with COVID, we'll arrange a phone assessment.
Okay.
Or alternatively, just ring the service here at Richmond
okay.
House, which is Brighton 731900, and we'll be happy to support and help
okay.
you.
Okay. And you're open as normal, like to answer the phone during office hours.
We are. So, you know, we are meeting people as and when the need is.
Right.
You know, so that, you know, with some people that you know, that having prescribing substitute opiate prescribing, okay, that basically they come in and they're drug screened. But I mean, the main thing that is that, as you can see here, we're yeah. in a massive timetable of groups that people can access online, they're being attended. People are really benefiting from the groups that we're providing. And it's not just us. We've got Cascade Creative Recovery.
Oh, yeah.
That was the cafe.
They've still got the cafe down there.
They're running a number of groups online, right. And we've got the timetable there. And there are some groups that are being run from Brighthelm.
Okay, the Cascade Cabaret, just to remind our viewers, our listeners, that's on Baker Street, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, the Cascade Recovery Cafe. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, that's been great to talk to you, Gary. One thing, we've recently started a Q&A session with Radio Reverb where people email questions and they get an idea of who we might be having as a guest to be interviewed. And so obviously it was announced that you were going to be coming on quite soon. Yes. So we've got our first question, and it's from somebody in East Grinstead. It's a 50-year-old man who says, I have been taking drugs for almost 30 years and have not been able to have sex without using crystal meth for over 10 of those years. I'm starting to worry that I may never be able to have a healthier and more meaningful sex life again. How can I break this cycle and end the emptiness I feel? Well, that's a good question. I hear that a lot. I mean, what would you say to this person, Gary?
Well, I mean, after I identify for this gentleman what services are available in East Grinstead.
Right.
I mean, if I can draw it back to the services that we've got here in Brighton.
Yeah.
I mean, in regard to the use of chemsex and engagement in chemsex, all of the services here, we've worked very closely together to ensure that people can access support.
Right.
So not just through the drug service, but through Terence Higgins Trust, through sexual health, through Mind Out. And it's about, as I say, building a network of support. And
for
this particular, I do know that THT, there have been online meetings earlier, and they're looking to develop a chemsex-related group, which will be open for anybody to join because it will be online.
Okay. When does that come? When will that open?
I'm not sure when about, but it's in its early stages.
Okay.
There's been a couple of meetings for that.
Right.
So, I mean, and I would encourage this gentleman to contact THT directly, enable him to link in with support that they may be able to offer him.
Okay.
Within the groups that we run here, as I say, we've got the ACT and we've got the SMART group, which is the self-management and recovery training, which again is CBT based. We've also got an LGBT Pacific group called Speak Out, which again is the number of people that have been on their own recovery journey in regard to chemsex. But I mean, there's I think it's really important that we support people to engage with the mutual aid and all of the support that's not only part of our service here, but also the excellent services provided throughout Brighton.
Wow, that's really good. Well, I hope that's been of some use to you. Well, Gary, thanks for meeting me today and helping me with some of those things that our listeners might be find useful.
Okay, Stuart, thank you very much.
All right, bye.
I conferred with our furry friend. Radio Reverb.
So welcome back to the HIV Hour. I'm here now with Dale, who's kindly come on to the HIV Hour. Really appreciate you coming on, Dale, to have a chat to us and the listeners. How are you doing?
Good, Josh. Not too bad at all, thank you. And thanks for inviting us as well.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and why you're in Brighton. And
I'm from Norfolk originally, but I don't talk like that, not today, but it's all right to still talk like that. I just don't, because I've sort of been around a little bit, as it were. And a bit about my background. Yeah, very quiet, shy kid. Found it really hard to admit that I was gay. Had a girlfriend for about 11 years till I was 30. Came out when I was 30. That was a bit difficult. And moved about from then on. outside of Norfolk. Been in Brighton now since, not last year, the year before. Rocked up for a night around the end of March.
It's what usually happens.
Yeah, and ended up moving. And then I found out from lots of other people that they've done the same.
Yeah, a lot of people do that, don't they? Yeah. Brighton's kind of got a nice atmosphere, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah. I'd lived in London for several years before that. And although I enjoyed London, I came down to Brighton to sort of get away from myself, really. But
you brought yourself with you.
Brought me along.
It's always the way, isn't it? That?
It is.
So so you got to Brighton. Can you elaborate on what happened and from there, what, you know, your journey from there?
What, from when I arrived in Brighton?
Yeah, there's a reason you came to Brighton, was there?
Yeah. So I suppose the reason why I came to Brighton was that I'd had a few problems back where I was living, and those problems were very much around what I was doing at the time and the problems that I was causing with my neighbours, and a lot of psychosis as well at the time. So I was slamming crystal meth, and I'd been doing it for quite a long time on a daily basis, and it got to that point whereby I just didn't really know what the hell to do. And so I was in the process of packing my stuff up. I came down to Brighton anyway for a day, and ended up staying here for about 3.5 weeks, and using while I was here, just turned Grindr on, and off I went. Just did the same that I used to do.
Yeah,
and checked into a treatment centre at the end of that 3.5 weeks, because I was in such a flipping state, and spent 28 days there. And while I was there, I managed to sort of bag a flat here in Brighton, a private rental flat, and came out and used again, put Grindr on, and used again. Not that I blame Grindr, you know, I turned it on.
Yeah.
I used to, but yeah. I don't today yet.
Those habits and those triggers we use, and they can just keep going in a circle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's one of these relentless sort of doing the next wrong thing rather than doing the next right thing, and not really having any control over that.
Right.
So I continued to sort of use for about another month. Got to know lots of people in Brighton during that time.
In those circles.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. Then I stopped for about 6 weeks, and I used the services offered by it's Pavilions at the time, Cranston's, which is now CGL.
Yeah,
and used some of their services and got involved with Gary Smith became my.
Well, we've had Gary on earlier, so
so he sort of. He definitely helped out introducing me to some of the services that were available in Brighton, and started to access some of those as well.
So, what can you say? Some of the services, what help, what support there?
Yeah. So THT,
of course, yeah,
being one of those services. Also, they what were the other bits and pieces? I tried out the Lunch Positive group as well at some point. I've been there a couple of times.
A great service.
It's really good. And then they do the, on the, I think it was a Wednesday, once a month, the over 50s one as well.
Okay.
So, yes, I've been to that. And some of the 12-step stuff as well, which I'd already been sort of engaging in as well. So... Cocaine Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous as well.
Yeah.
And I thought, what the hell are these things going to have to do with me? My thing isn't cocaine.
Did it help? But it did.
Yeah, it did. And then I got to a point about 6 weeks later where I was getting really fed up again. So I wasn't using, but that whole sort of triggery thing was on me as well. And I just wanted to use again. And everyone was annoying me. I'd go somewhere and there were too many gay people. I'd go another place. There were too many straight people. I'd go to another place and they were too quiet. Another one, they were too loud. Another one, they're too serious. One, they weren't serious enough. Not realising really that actually the problem inside was my inability to really accept things for how they were.
Yeah.
You know, like I used to really feel that everyone was living in Dale's world. So it's quite a stark reality check.
And it's getting to realise that it's not. Sorry, it's distractions as well, isn't it? What we use to distract from going to that world, going to our own world.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think I used sex for years as a distraction from how I really felt. And with myself and my girlfriend splitting up when I was 30, I felt like I had this entitlement as well to run around and have loads of sex, because I thought, well, I've really missed out here. So all of a sudden I'm in the sweet shop, and actually in Gayland, whatever one wants to call it, but it's accepted.
Yeah.
You know, one can go around and they can do whatever they want to do as well, sort of sex-wise. Well, that's my version of it. And what I am talking about is my version. You know, other people have got opinions as well, and mine's no more valid. It's just my opinion.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hid myself in sex right through till last September, really, when things really changed. But it is that thing with sex, and it's the same thing with drugs for me. Just once I start, I can't stop. And it just was never satisfying.
Yeah.
But it was always escaping from stuff.
What was the thing that said, this is it now, and now you're on that road to recovery and to...
I think the thing that really, really hit me was that a lot of the people that I was using with, of course, were very much like me. That drug, G&G as well, and all those type of things, it makes it very hard to distinguish the true from the false, and makes people quite fearful, quite scared, worried about what people are saying, what they're doing, what they're thinking.
It's a paranoia as well, isn't it?
Absolute crippling paranoia. And as soon as someone was to say, you're imagining it, or if I was to say it to someone else or whatever, it makes it worse. Yeah. Psychosis, it just makes it worse. And I used to feel that my psychosis wasn't as bad as most people's. But actually, it was really bad, really, really bad. It was the second time I'd been told I'd be dead within a few months because of how much I was taking, how often I was taking it. So I was told I'd have a heart attack, and I know several people that have died of heart attacks from this flipping stuff as well. And I... Sorry, Josh.
No, it's all right.
Yeah, and I got to a point whereby I'd moved around so many different times and lived in lots of different flats, and I had a bit of a falling out with someone, which meant that one of many with different people, to be honest. You know, I had lots of different best friends that would be best friends for a little while, and then bang, it'd all go wrong. I had a situation where I was moving out of a flat yet again, and it was on my 50th birthday. I'm moving out of this flat, moving into a very dear friend of mine who still is, into his spare room, and not feeling that I had any reason to celebrate my birthday, any right to celebrate my birthday, and just didn't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
I just felt so low, so worthless, so useless, so shameful, so guilty, and my contact with my family was, I'd like to say the word, but yeah, it was not good. And I'd run out of answers. I'd run out of ways of doing things myself to be able to feel okay. And it was just like living in one constant hellish nightmare full of really horrible mental dramas. So I decided, and this is with Gary's help actually, to go into the Sussex Beacon to have a bit of a kickstart, to start to see if I could take part in life again.
So taking a break.
Absolutely. To start a bit, to be able to do that and then come out and maybe in the daytimes go to a meeting, one of the 12-step meetings, or go to something that was being put on by pavilions as well. So I would do things like smart recovery, speak easy, speak out, all kinds of different things. I just threw myself into it, or ear acupuncture. It didn't matter. I just
doing as much as you
kept myself busy with things that were going, well, it was just trying to distract myself, first of all, but also distract myself with stuff that was a bit more healthy than what I was doing beforehand.
When were you diagnosed with HIV?
2005, August 2005.
Right.
Yeah.
And how did you? How was that?
Absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
I was told I was being dramatic at the time by the doctor of surgery because I'd been diagnosed with depression and whatnot, mental health problems since my early 20s. So they said that I was depressed and... I weren't particularly happy, but I knew there was something not right.
Yeah.
And anyway, to cut a long story short, I got the HIV diagnosis over the phone. And I was living in...
Over the phone?
Over the phone, yeah. Oh, that's I was extreme. Living in Milton Keynes at the time.
Yeah.
And my mum and dad were with me as well, so it was a bit of a...
shock.
Yeah. And I had a partner at the time as well who had no idea what was going on, so...
And were they positive or...?
No.
You didn't know?
No, they weren't. So, I'd been playing the field way over outside that field as well because, as I said, yeah, when I use sex like that, I can't stop.
Yeah.
I just... It's never enough. So, luckily, my partner was tested at the time and he wasn't HIV positive and had the test again after the Windows period. And he ended the relationship quite understandably so, although at the time I thought he was uncaring and unthoughtful, which seems absolutely mad today when I think of what I was doing. And, I really felt sorry for myself. And also it was a really nasty seroconversion. I know some people have really horrible ones, some people have such bad ones,
yeah.
But mine was pretty damn horrible. And so for about 6 or 8 weeks, it was like having really bad flu and sweats and all sorts. And I don't ever think I'd really accepted the fact that I was gay, even though I was hiding in loads and loads of sex with people of the same sex as me and doing what I was doing. And being something that I never would have even liked to sort of admit this word, but reckless.
Yeah.
Really reckless. I mean, if anyone was to put a condom near me, I wouldn't say I'm particularly keen on them these days, but I do feel different about that side of things. But I think what then happened was, being HIV positive, it almost gave me free rein to say to myself, oh, well, you've got it now. You've got it now, so it's okay. You can't get it again. So I became even more reckless at the time.
Right.
Incredibly so. And felt justified in being like that. If that makes any sense whatsoever, but that's just me being, you know, just truly honest, really. And
I think when we how society sees being gay and our own internal homophobia, I think talking from my own experience as well, that can drive a lot of addictions, can't it?
I think so.
I
think it can really turn, and I think because our community has really had to push for a voice as well and equality and things like that. I think some of that sometimes has got to the point where it gets so extreme. Is that in my head it was like, well, I started to believe it was bad to be good and good to be bad.
Mm.
Celebrating that fact.
Yeah.
Actually celebrating that and going to heck with it, to hell with it.
And it's an escape as well, isn't it? From that.
It is, it is. And it just...
Stigma.
Was an absolute enabler for me to get even more out of control.
Yeah.
And I think because I had good jobs for a lot of the time, which paid well, I had nice places to live, I was part of the sort of I suppose, the South London scene and all these things that added up to that I was okay. But all the time, I think I really used my HIV as a way to beat myself even further into a pulp and not realise.
Yeah, I can understand that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just didn't realise that at the time. And that's really sad. And I know I'm far from the only person that's done that as well, almost sort of as a way of trying really hard to accept my status, but at the same time not realising that I'm doing absolutely everything that is completely non-accepting of who I really am, which is actually good enough, an okay person.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me a bad person becoming HIV positive.
Radio Reverb.
You're listening to the HIV Hour. I'm just with Dale, who's having a chat about his story, and yeah, welcome back.
I think I carried around, and this will be till earlier this year, really, I carried around so much internalised homophobia and non-acceptance of myself. And HIV was just another excuse for me to batter myself into a pulp.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. I had no idea. And this year has been a real experience of being actually to see what I did to myself.
Yeah.
To try and escape from actually who I really am.
Yeah.
Because I was never able to really to connect, I don't feel, with people as a kid. I was always shy, I was always scared. At Christmas and things like that, I would want to be able to interact with the family and the cousins. I used to think, how do they do this? I couldn't do it. I tried so hard, and I used to feel like I was the only person that was like that. And I used to think of my sexuality, that it was something that was bad, that it was something that was wrong. And you know, even to the point of 11 years trying to have a relationship with a female, just trying everything I could not to be who I really was. And then the HIV gave me another thing to just beat myself over the head over it. But I am so grateful today, with a clear head, to be able to see that actually, yeah, that's not the truth. And not just see that, but feel it. Feel very different.
Yeah, the feelings are, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to feel it and know it in your heart, I think.
Yeah.
And as you said, we've got these journeys and these things we go through kind of get us to certain places, I think.
They do.
And yeah.
And I think sometimes one has to really get to that point, I know I did, where things are really, really, really bad.
Yeah.
Really excruciatingly bad to be able to walk through the other side as well, to actually walk through that. Because that's what it felt like at times, walking through hell. And actually having walked through that and today being able to use that experience that I have, which I do to help other people, is something that I've always wanted to do. Because when I was off my head, I used to try and help other people. But right. Of course, I couldn't really help myself. But today I have the opportunity and have had several opportunities and they keep coming up.
So
So being part of a service user over at Pavilions, now CGL, so now I'm doing the training to be a peer mentor with them as well, and I've been helping out with that, so that's really good stuff.
Yeah, amazing,
giving
yeah.
back.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll sort of see where that goes. Also with THT as well, I've been part of a sort of small working group to put together some kind of sort of pilot as well around chemsex.
Okay.
As well. And that's been really good to be able to have my side of the experience with the people that are actually putting this together within the organisation to help say, well, actually, yeah, I think it may be better to do it on a certain day because of this, because of that, and actually I think, cut through some of the stuff that maybe people can't see if they haven't had that, those experiences.
Yeah.
Having experienced what I've experienced, I can share that back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's that. Also, when THT has been opened, I was volunteering there on reception. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And what other stuff is there going on? Obviously doing this as well.
Which is always a good thing. I think always telling your story and other people can hear, just hear it and hear what you've gone through and to come out the other side,
yeah.
I think is inspirational and helps, you know, people who are listening.
I mean, I have friends that still use as well. And I think what Tina did to me was for those that don't know what Tina is, that's crystal meth. What it did for me was told me a lie that actually I would never be able to stop using that stuff.
Mm.
No way, and I would never be able to stop using it, and I'd just carry on and all the rest. But it is possible. I mean, I've not used that for about 13 and a half months now. And that is incredible. And I have a really different life today.
Mm.
And it's good to be able to be part of that community that's come out of that. And there are people that are coming out of that. And I think it can be very strongly linked with HIV from what I've seen as well. It's a lot of that, you know, whether people are already HIV positive and they use it as a part of that to escape themselves or whatever it may be.
I think my story, my experience, I think I did that. I felt ashamed, actually.
Yeah.
I felt ashamed about my sexuality and
then
the HIV was on top of that. And it, as you said earlier, I think it was another thing to beat myself up with.
Yeah, definitely. Just to and then not be able to stop it. That's the craziness.
Yeah, yeah.
But now there are people coming through that have stopped it and are able to. And actually, life's not boring without it. Life was so much more boring with it. Who'd have thought? You know, I can actually really enjoy like these small things that I never could have done beforehand. So, like, when I came to Brighton, I was telling my friends that didn't live here that how great it is living in Brighton by the sea, and it's really nice. Yeah, it might have been great, but I couldn't appreciate it. Whereas today, I really appreciate stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or going out for a coffee with mates or whatever. These type of things that I used to think, God, dull. How dull is life going to be? And I have never laughed so much.
Which,
yeah.
I suppose it's a release as well. And as you say, you become you become who you are and you start to like who you are, I think. With COVID and the lockdown, that would have pushed a lot of people back into old habits and things. So that's. Did you feel that when you were in lockdown, or was it just you were just focused?
My experience was really different. My experience has been really different as well, but I've seen a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of mental health problems during lockdown as well, and those type of things being exacerbated. My experience has been. Pardon me. My experience has been really different.
Right.
And I think that's because I just dived into trying to do the next right thing rather than doing the next wrong thing. Because I would absolutely dive in doing the next wrong thing and just looking for the next and the next and thinking that was great. But actually realising how unfulfilling it really was. So for me, and I think it was so important, was diving into get better.
Yeah.
To get better from actually all those years of being so unwell and just diving into what there was to help keep me well. I mean, things like Zoom. I used to use Zoom during my using. It was something that I used to go on and do what I did with other people that did the same thing.
Oh, okay.
So I use Zoom now for so many different recovery based things, and I suggest that recovery isn't a word to be frightened of either, because I much prefer to be getting better than getting worse.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing. And I think during the COVID time, things like Zoom have really opened up the good stuff as well. So if I think of CGL, the type of things, everything's gone onto Zoom.
Yeah.
People have embraced that. People don't actually have to go out of their own flat, their own house, their own whatever, to tap into other people.
Yeah.
To be able to connect.
That support as well.
It
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
And whether that person has HIV or not, or whatever it might be, I think people have made more of an effort generally to connect, to get on with each other,
yeah.
to
yeah.
see how each other is. And for me, it's been just one heck of a year. I mean, I've been in swimming, I don't know how many times, in the sea.
Not today.
No, although I was going to go this week, believe it or not.
Good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, it won't be today.
I think you need some armbands today.
Definitely.
And a rope. Let's get you back in.
And it's like, I know so many people in Brighton as well, because it is a friendly place.
Yeah,
it's so friendly. And I'm lucky enough to have some really good people around me that care,
yeah.
that go out of their way. And so my life's really busy, whether it's on Zoom, whether it's going out and about, whatever it might be what I'm doing, or whether it's you know, chatting with my family, seeing how they are. And yeah, so I suppose for me, I sort of called it the big pause. Well, someone else called it the big pause, and I've taken that on because it is like a big pause. And
yeah.
I think people are thinking a bit differently. I think they're waking up a little bit, and they're seeing things a little bit differently as well during this time.
Yeah,
because this whole sort of it. I mean, not wanting to get into a load of politics because I don't watch the news. But no one really knows what's going on. But no. To be honest, no one really knew what was going on in the first place. I might have thought I did.
It's just brought it up into the open.
Yeah, I realised today how very little I know as to what I thought I did.
Yeah.
And I think this is just a real big exercise in that.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. We're coming to the end of the interview. I was going to ask you, what advice would you give? I mean, I'm going to do a RuPaul thing here. What advice, if you watch RuPaul's Drag Race,
I do.
What advice would you give to your younger self, and actually any other listeners who's gone through or is going through a situation like yours?
I would say to my younger self is that actually if I'd have been a bit more honest with myself about who I was and didn't try and escape from myself so much, a bit more open-minded as well about that situation, and maybe willing to do some of the things that maybe I didn't want to do, and maybe stick around and hang around some of those people that seem to have something about them that actually is a bit more solid, a bit more meaningful, a bit deeper than maybe what I was led to believe. Because it's nice to do some of the stuff like the gym and look after myself and all those things, but I'm very good at doing those to extremes, and it's the extreme side of things that are very damaging.
Right.
So maybe seek a little bit more balance. And I think there's lots of ways to do that today, and I think that, yeah, probably would have sort out a little bit more of that,
yeah,
and ask someone maybe that, you know, seems to have a little bit more balance in their lives, maybe how they do it, they did it.
Get support, the sports out there, isn't it?
There's so much support out there. Yeah.
So your track, you've got a track we're going to play now. It's one of my faves as well. Tell me all about it and what it's called.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's Passion by Gat Decor.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the HIV Hour. It's a pleasure you've come on. Yeah, you're listening to Radio Reverb, the HIV Hour, on 97.2 FM. Thank you, Dale, and let's listen to a fantastic track, Gat Decor and Passion.
Thanks, Josh.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.